Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTÉ Radio 1.
Hello again, and to some news at EU level now, and reports that when the bloc's foreign ministers meet next week, they're going to discuss potentially allowing individual member states to ban imports from illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied territories. You may be aware the review was recently undertaken of the EU Association Agreement. That's the agreement that has been underpinned the principles of trade and other links between Israel and Europe since it came into force about 25 years ago, and it includes conditions around respect for human rights. A review found that Israel has breached those human rights stipulations in its military campaigns on Gaza since October 7th, 2023. And a leaked copy of a so-called options paper prepared following that review was seen by a number of journalists yesterday. As we know, that one of the potential moves now up for consideration is permitting member states to make their own decisions on trade with the illegal Israeli settlements. Lynn Boylan, as an MEP, this is going to be considered by EU foreign ministers on Tuesday. What would your view be on what the outcome of that would be?
Well, regardless of the outcome, like, Ireland obviously is introducing its own occupied territories bill, but it should include services so that it's in compliance with the International Court of Justice. But for me, this does not go anywhere near far enough in terms of what the EU should be doing. Just to be compliant with international law, they should be suspending trade overall with Israel, not just the trade with the illegal settlements. I also believe there should be sanctions and an arms embargo. And it's really, really disappointing and incredibly frustrating now that the EU is still dragging its feet on taking any action against Israel. And it's damaged its credibility completely on the international stage.
You don't see this as any form of a move towards a position you'd be more in favour of?
They're being forced into this because what the EU hates is when member states go it alone. And we've seen that before when it came to labelling of goods from illegal settlements. I think Britain were the first to act on it when they were still a member of the EU. And then another country followed suit. And all of a sudden then you don't have that, they like to have everything uniformity. So they then moved to bring in labelling of illegal of goods from illegal settlements across the EU. So I feel that they know the writing's on the wall that Ireland is going to act. The Prime Minister of Slovenia on the 28th of June at the last council meeting said that if there wasn't going to be a decision at the EU Council, that member states would have to go and do their own measures. So they can see the writing on the wall. They're now saying, okay, you can ban trade with illegal settlements, but that does not go anywhere near far enough as to what the actions they should be taking against Israel at this point.
All right. It doesn't limit it to goods, Barry Ward, does it? I mean, what the options paper says so far is that it's up to individual member states to take actions on trade with the illegal settlements. So why is Ireland excluding services in the current iteration of the bill? Or sorry, why is the government excluding services in the current iteration of its bill?
I think it's important to acknowledge, first of all, that Ireland is the only country in the European Union in advancing legislation in this vein. I think this is a very positive step. I think it's a reflection, and I'm delighted to hear Lynn tacitly acknowledge the work that Ireland has done to build a coalition at European level of people and countries who recognise that the actions of Israel are contrary to human rights law, and therefore that there are terms in the EU-Israel Association Agreement. I raised this with Simon Harris in the Dáil on Thursday. He agreed that it should not be consequence-free. You now have a finding by the European Union. In addition to the advisory opinion of the ICJ, there's a very clear statement that Israel is in breach of that agreement, and we should be taking the steps to implement the human rights element of it. We absolutely should.
But just going back to the specific issue of services, this talks about imports from illegal Israeli settlements.
Yeah.
It doesn't distinguish between goods and services.
So why is the
Irish government doing that?
The landscape is constantly changing. The landscape has changed because of actions that Ireland has taken. The landscape has also changed because of the case that was taken by South Africa. The Attorney General's
just to be clear about this, has the landscape changed to a sufficient extent that services could be back on the table?
I don't know, and I haven't seen the Attorney General's advice, but I understand there is clear advice in this area. Whether that will change or not, I don't know. But clearly, we know that up to a certain point, the European Union took the view that trade was a union competence. The ICJ opinion changed that. That opened the door for Ireland to do what it's doing. And the building of that coalition has changed the political landscape in Europe in relation to these issues.
Paul Murphy, what does this enable the government to do, in your view?
Well, in my opinion, it means the government must proceed at the very least with the ban on trade in goods and services with the occupied territories. There is no more wiggle room for them here to this kind of false argument that there's a legal distinction between goods and services, which does not exist. It does not exist in the options paper. It does not exist in the International Court of Justice ruling, which they rest their whole argument as to why they can now do this. That was clear. No trade or investment relations with the occupied territories. The government has said that there is a legal problem with services. But now, 2 weeks into committee hearing, they haven't said what that legal problem is. There was three of the top European lawyers in before the committee on Wednesday. Two of the three were absolute about trade in goods and services. And the third was saying that there's arguments on both sides. Okay, well, and there hasn't, like, because it was suggested there that maybe the Attorney General has advice to say that there's a problem with services. That has not been said. We know 2 or 3 weeks ago there certainly was no Attorney General advice to say there was a problem with services. The problem seemed to be coming from the Department of Foreign Affairs, but they haven't substantiated
that. Is
that
problem
that.
Because Blinini Grolick, Barry Ward, who represented South Africa in their case in the International Court of Justice, she was in before the Oireachtas during the week. She said the bill, the current bill's narrow focus on goods fails to ensure compliance with even the duty set out in the advisory opinion requiring Ireland to distinguish between Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories in its dealings. She goes on to say there is no basis in international law for differentiating between trade in goods and trade in services in the manner proposed. Is the distinction being made by the Irish government legal or political?
Oh, I don't think it's political anyway. I don't think there's any basis for that. In fairness, just taking a step back for a moment, the Irish government has been the strongest voice in European politics to recognise that what Israel is doing is illegal. That started with Leo Varadkar. Simon Harris has been incredibly strong on the issue. Micheál Martin has also been strong on this issue. So I don't think it's political. And to suggest that it is happening here is a political point in and of itself.
It's not a political point in and of itself, because there's a distinction between what a lawyer who has argued before the International Court of Justice is saying and pushback in the United States, who talk about, you know, the impact.
But there's no basis for suspecting
the impact of an occupied territory.
A week ago, Micheál Martin warns that companies in Ireland could face penalties in the US if services are included in the ban. That's political. That's not legal. So make the argument as to why we should bow down to US imperialism. That's the argument.
So in your view, Barry Ward, what's the legal argument to exclude services?
It's not my view, and I'm not making a legal argument. And the notion that I'm sitting here, yes, I practice law, but I'm not a trade lawyer. Trade law is some of the most complex law that we have to deal with. It goes across several jurisdictions. And the notion that Paul Murphy or Lynn Boylan or one lawyer to one committee is an authority in the subject, or two lawyers to committee, three or ten. The point is, you cannot just make the decision that one person thinks that therefore that's right, because you pick and choose the people who suit the opinion that you have. And I know that there are claims made, I have X number of legal opinions.
But we haven't actually heard any legal opinion from the government as to why services are excluded, other than to say that they have to be excluded.
And Lynn says that knowing that the Attorney General's advice is never shared, because the Taoiseach has
even said it when he was in, I think he was in Japan at the time, who has said that, you know, they are worried about the impact and the pressure coming from the US. I mean, and that's fine.
But
that
if they're worried,
the case, then be
why
honest
would they be
about
the strongest
it?
European voice to deal with Israel?
Okay. Well, in fairness,
the argument just doesn't
The president of Slovenia was the first EU head of state that actually said it was a genocide that was taking place. So that's for the record.
Just a final question on this issue, Barry Ward. The government has now moved to calling Israel's attacks in Gaza genocide, and the denial of aid and all of the rest of it. If it is genocide, is it now time for the government to allow a free vote on matters of conscience on the issue of on this particular issue in the Dáil? So if government party members want to support amendments, if they want to support an occupied territories bill that includes services, I mean, if abortion could trigger a vote of conscience, why can't genocide trigger a vote of conscience?
You see, you're asking a government backbencher if he should be allowed to vote whatever way he wants. I think he absolutely should, but that's not the way government works, and the Dáil functions don't hold together if the government allows anybody to say whatever they want any time. We come together as a party and parties because we have shared basic beliefs. Of course, they differ from bill to bill, but I'd love to see a free vote, but that's not the way the government can work, because the government has a relatively slim majority and it needs to
hold on a narrow set of issues on a matter of conscience like this, when it comes to something the government
you know
is called
my
genocide.
View, but I also recognise the reality of government. The government has to get through, and at the same time you're dealing with really disingenuous stuff from the opposition. So a motion that came from Sinn Féin that they knew hadn't any basis in law, but they still put it forward because there are great points to be scored politically.
It's not about scoring points, Barry, because because I, as chair of the delegation for relations with Palestine, I speak with people who are in Gaza on a weekly basis, and to be having to say to them that no, the EU is not going to act. No,
yeah,
the Irish government is only going to ban trade.
You're mixing two things: the EU and the Irish government. I'm very disappointed by the EU, but I'm very proud of what the Irish government has done.
You're very disappointed by the EU, but the Irish MEPs. There's only four of us voted in no confidence in Ursula von der Leyen.
Look who you banded with. Some of the worst anti-European far right elements in the parliament.
For listeners
who aren't aware, this was to do with transparency on the texts that Ursula von der Leyen had exchanged with the chief executive of Pfizer.